Welcome to the Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
We drove down to Lander, Wyoming, home of the global headquarters for Maven Optics. We're here with the three owners of Maven Optics, Brendan Weaver, Mike Lilligren, and Cade Mastis. Did I get that right?
Nailed it.
Oh, I've been practicing. We came down, they invited us down. They're starting to brainstorm on a new long-range scope, and they were nice enough to let us shoot machine guns. We appreciate that.
That was a good time.
That was fun.
It's never a bad thing to throw a little lead downrange.
You know, the one thing you noticed out of that is I just posted Tanya's on Instagram is when you shoot a machine gun, everybody starts to grin.
Everybody.
It just makes you happy.
It does. Yeah, you can't be sad pulling the trigger on a full auto. There's no room for it.
Even Brendan, who said he's not the big gun guy, you look over and he has a big shit-eating grin after shooting that
P90. I've never shot a gun like that.
He shot the P90, which is a really fun gun to shoot.
It's a fun gun to shoot, and it's not a fun gun to load.
It takes 50 rounds like that, but it takes you about 20 minutes to put that 50 rounds in there.
Yeah, you have to earn it. That's the thing. If you could just sit there and pull the trigger all day and not have to load magazines, you'd be broke, but at least there's some cost benefit in there. So,
and you can give the guy credit. Who's the guy? Kevin
Whitaker.
Whitaker brought him down. We appreciate that, Kevin, because I know it's not fun to pack machine guns around and load for people. So,
and clean them all after we're done.
Yeah, and it started raining, so we did have some maintenance to do. So it was fun though.
Yeah, he said that fan rep, and we were pretty lucky that he brought some toys to play with.
That SCAR 308, that thing. That's fun to shoot.
The difference between the SCAR 308 and the SCAR 223 is amazing. I don't know if you shot the SCAR 223.
I didn't.
The 223 is way louder.
It is.
So much easier to control.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that one you actually have a chance of hitting something with. The 308, it's like it's...
I think Kevin was the only one hitting anything with those.
Ryan was holding it pretty solid.
But when you saw Kevin shot, he knew what he was doing. He stays down on it, and I couldn't.
And he's a big dude, so that helps.
Yeah, he's a big boy, but I couldn't stay down. It just kept driving me up.
He shot it a time of 400, though.
That's pretty impressive with the auto.
Yeah, he hit the Raven several times on full auto. I don't think I even sniffed the Raven at full auto.
No, but you shot it offhand on that 6.5 Creedmoor.
I did, but I'll say I practiced that.
Two times in a row, though. You just picked it up. Bing, bing.
Yeah, you did good with offhand shot.
Well, I practiced that. I don't ever get to practice machine gun. I'd love to practice with machine gun, but I don't think the bank account can afford it.
Yeah, you'd need an ammo sponsor if you're doing that business, because that's a whole different...
Yeah.
Prime ammo, did you hear that?
Prime ammo. Getting tagged.
So I want to kind of touch on two things that are brought up on Rock Slide quite a bit, and the first one being you guys started here in Lander. How does an optics company, Maven, come out of a small town in Wyoming? How did that all start? I know that's a broad topic, but my point of getting to it is everybody says, oh, they're just a rebranded Brunton line of optics. I kind of want to go through how that started, how you guys came out of Brunton, and then started this company several years after that. Anybody want to go first on that? Not all at once?
Sure, I'll go first. So
Mike's icebreaker on the conversation. And then we actually filter through the bullshit.
I never actually have any content, but I'm willing to start right out of the gate. So.
Well, the thing I think is it's kind of like Bozeman. Bozeman's bigger, but there's a lot of outdoor companies in Bozeman. And for Lander to have a really good optics company is kind of a weird place to be to grow an optics company.
But why? So, I mean, people say that all the time. I think you're absolutely, there are a lot of people are wonder about why would a company, would any kind of company with any quality, but optics in particular, come out of Lander. And I think the real secret and the secret of our whole point of this company is we started this company because we wanted to live in Lander. And in this day and age, you can live anywhere. You can be anywhere in the world and operate and do anything you want to do. I mean, obviously you have to have some smarts into it. You have to have the relationships. You have to have the willingness to travel, because you travel down here. We're in the middle of freaking nowhere, but we love it here. And that's why, I mean, we want to have our families here. We want to be able to do the activities we love to do. We love to hunt. We love to fish. It's all right here. And so that's the whole reason for our existence. What we took it, where the company went to, has to do with us, not with Lander.
Right.
And I would say the same thing's true with Bozeman. You see all these companies coming out of Bozeman. It's not because Bozeman is fostering some secret sauce, because people like to live in Bozeman. It's a cool town. That's a little big for me because I have no interest in living in Bozeman, but a lot of people do. And so, of course, they hire each other, and, you know, it's a little inbred society now. But we don't have that yet. Might come, you know.
So, but actually, that I mean, we're here because we used to work for Brunton, and that's what kind of brought us together.
Together, yeah.
And so it is a little bit of that. And there's, you know, we start working for Brunton, and we get... make all these contacts, and then as they went through their buy and sell cycle and kind of got broken apart, we all had those individual decisions to make of, do we want to
move somewhere
to stay with the company? Do we want to move out of town to find a similar job? And we took the opportunity to create something on our own and stay here. And so that's that where you live, work where you live type thing. And it's possible now, you know, the internet, transportation, airplane travel, the whole country is accessible within 12 hours of just about anywhere. And so the modern day communications and everything really makes this kind of thing possible where it might not have even been feasible 15 years ago. Level 50.
And there actually is, it because we're direct to consumer and we're shipping all around the country and we ship all around the world, but obviously most of our business is in the US. Being a centrally located, you're being in the center of the country actually is advantageous because shipping rates are very similar. Whether you're shipping, you know, if we were in Denver, if we were in Phoenix, whatever, the shipping rates would be similar. But because we're central, our shipping to the East Coast is not, you know, if you were in California, like shipping to the East Coast would be a lot of time. The costs would be similar, but the time delay that people want their stuff now. Mm-hmm. That's what, I mean, all consumers want it now.
So the direct model, that was just a process of living in Lander and the internet coming of age. And
you guys, well, it's when model. When we started to have the conversations about how to change what our business was. We were doing something after we'd been away from Brunton for 6 years.
Six years. Before we started Maiden.
Was the gap, 6 years.
Yeah.
So we all left Brunton and we decided we didn't want to move. And we all decided we wanted to work together, which is an interesting, and you've been to the fire pit. That was an interesting choice. But you know, that was a big decision, and I think that's probably the single thing that makes us who we are, is that the three of us sat around campfire or a fire pit in the back of Brennan's yard, drank beers, and decided to go into business together. And we decided to go into business initially without having any one of us be the boss. That all three of us would bring our skill sets to the table, but we would be all three of us at the table. And that's the decision process. And we decided early on, if two people vote to do something, we do it. And the other person just, if they disagree, they just check their ego out and do it. And that actually, I think, is the best decision we made. Because partnerships, you've seen a lot of partnerships.
Yeah.
Like one-on-one partnerships and some marriage. And a lot of marriages end up in divorce and a lot of business partnerships end in separation. And they freaking hate each other.
That's the impressive part, because you always hear partners are for dancing, you know, not for businesses.
Right.
But not only is there partners, there's three of you. And you guys have worked together for how long now?
Mike and I worked together for... 8 years at Brunton.
Yeah. So 18 years now.
Yeah.
18 years.
And I was there for the last three of Brunton.
Right.
Yeah.
Late to the
party. So 15.
Late to the party.
Yeah. Late to the party.
And I can
that's about how much younger I am than everybody else.
So that's key there. That's the factor.
Well, less mature.
The thing is cool is I can tell that you guys generally care about each other. Your town, you guys walking around their town, they invited us down here. Walking around your town, this is like a throwback. Because everybody knows, everybody waves. We're at the bar.
We went to Cheers last night.
Went to Cheers. Everybody knew who Brendan. Everybody talked to Mike. Yeah. Cade.
That's small town Wyoming, though. That's one of the great things about being here is everybody's very supportive of what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
there's a lot of Maven stickers in Lander. I was like, there. Oh, there's another one. There's another one. So that's refreshing to me. And another thing that I'll bring up that was kind of refreshing. I didn't know Cade and I didn't know Mike from Adam. I talked to Brendan, the Rockslide Angle reviewing product. I called down one day. I had, like, when your C1s, you sent them up, they came up and there were some questions. So I called Brendan. He didn't answer. He's probably busy.
He probably saw.
So I just called their 800 number and Mike answers. And Mike don't know me from Adam. I start talking to him, and he's like, "Well, I'm on my house now, right now, cocking something to."
Well, he called me like 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, and you answered the phone.
And I answered the phone because we usually do, because our 800 number rings, and then if it doesn't answer in like 3 or 4 rings, it forwards to all of our cell phones at the same time, and so. Whoever gets
and it. And I saw it, and I'm like, Brian Avery, Jesus.
Just quit calling,
oh, dude.
And see, I didn't have your caller ID yet.
Saturday. Leave me alone.
So I answered, yeah, and I was up on my roof, like, fixing the flashing, because I was repainting.
And Mike was like, so are you going to buy anything? You just call and ask questions, are you going to buy anything?
Who the hell is this guy? Are you going to buy some optics? But you answered all my questions, and then at the end, he's like, well, I'm up on my roof right now, because I asked you something you had to look at the computer for. I can call you right back. I'm like, dude, you're good. You've already taken 20 minutes standing on your roof in the dark, probably, answering questions.
It's amazing on, like, if you answer the phone on Sundays, it really, people are taken off guard. They're like,
because
I thought I was just going to leave a message.
Yeah.
Well, I think calling at any time of the day now, getting a human is rare. Yeah.
And getting a human that knows the answers that are actually accurate, not just bullshit, is refreshing.
Yep.
That's why I handle the emails.
That's why Mike answers.
He has to look up the answers.
He's an emailer.
It usually takes me 3 iterations to get the sarcasm out of my responses. So.
He has to send it to each person. What do you
is that
think?
What you think?
Is this approved?
Is this approved? Are we going to lose a customer?
He has to run it through.
I have to do the same thing with Ryan, and he has to do the same thing with me. Is this okay? Did it sound bad? Because you have to be careful with email and stuff. You just, it doesn't come through the same way as if you were just saying it to somebody.
There's no sarcasm. No sarcasm in texts or emails. Well, I want to cover on the, we did it our last podcast. Brendan talked about a little bit, but and I don't get that question near as much, but what have you guys changed? Not only nuts and bolts, just the general view of what you guys are designing and bringing to market is far superior than Brunton ever did, in my opinion. Can you guys kind of expand on that, what you guys have done from that point to now?
I think technology has definitely advanced. I mean, if you look at anybody's products from 15 years ago till now, it's just technology has advanced. And so, you know, the relationships, Cade mentioned the relationships that we had, which is why we're here today. The people that we work with in Japan are making some of the best stuff in the world, you know, and that was the key to us getting this business going, is because those guys were very supportive of our plan. And our plan is not an easy plan. Going direct, selling custom products, something that you can't just assembly line. You know, everyone has to be done different. If people aren't familiar with what we're doing, we have customization options on the binoculars and spotting scopes. You know, that kind of stuff wasn't done. I think Leupold was doing some customization on their rifle scopes, but nobody's doing that with binoculars.
No.
But I would say it's primarily just technology change. We were doing some really nice stuff at the end at Brunton.
I think there's a second piece of it, and I think you're absolutely right. The technology piece is the biggest piece, but the second part is the money. Nobody can afford in the traditional markup model of products to do what we're now doing, because they're going to end up with a product that's competing for right head-to-head price-wise with the biggest, most expensive stuff out there. And we've all seen it. The European brands are getting more and more and more expensive. It's happened a lot in the last. And the technology is getting better. The optic quality is getting better. But every traditional model company that has, you know, that has a wholesale or it's a distributor and wholesale pricing, and they have sales reps to pay and all of that piece, when you pay as much as you, in order to get the best product you can, it ends up pricing itself out of competitive. And so by picking our direct-to-consumer model, we could do that. We could pay more for a product and still sell it at a reasonable price. And so instead, when you sit at the table and you're like, man, I'd really like to add fluorite crystal glass to this spotting scope, they're like, well, oh crap, that's going to add this much dollar. And you do the calculation and you realize you're going to have to charge twice as much for this product. Everybody's like, well, do we really need to do that? Is it really going to compete? What is it, you know, and the advantage maybe is 10% in performance. Is it worth it? And now we can say, hell yeah, it's worth it. Let's do it, because let's be the best we can be and the price is still a reasonable price to pay. So I think the model actually helped us a lot to do better product, to do a lot better product than we would have had to if we were going to try to compete with, you know, the guys that are on the shelf at Cabela's.
Yeah. Well, and that makes a lot of sense hearing that, because I think a lot of people have in their mind, you know, the old analogy, you get what you pay for. So when it's not priced according to what they consider the quality that they're looking for,
right,
then it's like they immediately dismiss it because it's not going to be as good. But that's not at all the reality.
Yeah, that's tough. People judge by price.
Mm-hmm. They do. I mean,
100%.
Yeah.
Just take your C1s, for instance. I always say this, and I truly believe this. In their $800, you buy the C1s. And people are like, but they're $350. They don't get that concept that there's no middleman. You're right. Getting it right from the shop.
I think people have heard that for so long with other products. It's factory direct that they just don't believe it.
Right.
You know, so we're going to always battle that. You know, we send our products to editors to review, and they'll group them by price. And that's just, that's not where our product fits. Mm-hmm. You know, our product fits against stuff that would be, you know, at least another third.
When I looked at your RS1 the first time, I was like, man, that, to me, that's not a $1,200 scope. When I grab it, look at it, I think that's like an $1,800 scope.
Right.
So that's hard to convey to the consumer until they can touch it and feel it.
Right. Yep.
But that's the great thing about you guys going to so many shows, is that you people have access to you. I know it's not great for you guys, but as for the consumer, there's no excuse that they can't go and test your products out, because you're in so many places. So they could, you know, you, and not a lot of companies, even direct ones, are at as many shows as you guys are. By even a long stretch.
And one of the interesting things about the direct model, and it's probably the biggest strength and the biggest weakness, is that every customer contact is basically one sale. You know, in the wholesale market, there's three or four companies that can make your year. And you put all of your time and effort and product design and everything into pleasing those four people. And if they buy your stuff, you're on easy street. And if not, you're laying people off. For us, it's each customer interaction. Doesn't matter if it's a phone call, an email, or seeing us at a show. Everyone that comes up, potential for one sale. Mm-hmm. If you screw it up, there's some ups and downs to it. But people ask all the time, oh, how do you go to these consumer shows? You know, everyone in the industry, SHOT shows like the Holy Grail, you know, oh, I'm going to SHOT, and post it on your Instagram page for 20 days that's what you're doing.
Right.
But no one brags that they're heading to ISE Denver or they're heading to the Cody Outdoor Show. But you set up there and you spend, you know, 20 minutes face to face with a customer and, or potential customer, or sometimes there are someone that are just there to shoot holes in your product. But you're dealing with users. Every person that comes by the booth and talks to you isn't thinking about how they're going to make a profit off selling your product. Like in the wholesale side, they want to know what the practical application is for their life. Is the scope going to work on their gun? Is the binos going to work for how they use them? One of my favorite things I hear is, I'm considering your binos, but I already own this bino case. Are they going to fit? So you're going to make a $1,000 purchasing decision off a $90 accessory you already own. But I can tell you how many times I've got that question. They want to know if it's going to fit in their favorite vinyl case before they pull the trigger.
They invest.
Wow. That is funny, because I'm sure that applies in a lot of situations where you're like, let's talk about that. Yeah, you're going about it backwards.
But that's just, I mean, people think differently, and that's what's fun about talking to the customers. And then you end up with, you know, we go back to a lot of these shows over and over. And they're bringing their friends and their cousins by. Or, you know, we always get a super fan that comes by and says, I own everything that you make. What's next? I just need to know what's next so I know what to start saving up for. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool.
The conversations at consumer shows are just so much more fun.
Absolutely.
People are excited about a new brand. They're excited about cool products. You know, we've done SHOT Show for 15 years. Mm-hmm. That's, you don't have those conversations there. Mm-hmm. It is a buyer trying to beat you up on price, trying to tear apart your product, saying they want this instead of this.
Co-op dollars and
playing yeah, grounds. It's, I mean, but like Kate said, you're going to, you know, that guy's going to buy, you know, $100,000 worth of stuff where you talk to one guy at the consumer show and you hope he's going to spend $1,000. But they are so much more, the shows themselves are just so much more enjoyable than trade shows.
But they are, I have to say, they have to be exhausting for you too.
They are, all those shows. For sure. Yeah. For sure. But, you know, usually we have a cooler beer in the back of the booth, and that helps you kind of turn the edge.
We sell
more.
That.
Once we start having beer, we sell more.
Yep.
Is it true? We've oh, tracked it.
Dude, that's
absolutely.
That's it doesn't make, only make you shoot better, it also makes you sell better.
And if you know the secret password, if you buy an optic at a show, you get a free beer.
So. Or you can just dig around in the cooler.
I don't even
when you walk by.
I just sneak around.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Bag.
I hear the cooler crack. I look over, there's the Avery. Like raccoons in the garbage can.
Oh, and that is a true statement.
And if you do go to a show, you got to ask them about their smoker.
Yes.
Oh, the smoker.
That there smoker?
Yep. They pull a trailer with all of their contents and all of their product in this. What would you call that little trailer? It does kind of look like
well, the trailer.
We'll
post up a picture.
Yeah, well, I'll take a picture.
You have to see it. You can't just envision it.
It does look a little bit like it could be a smoker.
Got some briskets in there.
Dude, that would be badass.
Oh, I love when people argue with me.
Is that a smoker?
No, that's our trailer. No, that's a smoker. What you got?
Or a camp trailer. Some of them, like, that's one of them off-road camp trailers. No, this is actually a custom-built cargo trailer. No, it's a camp trailer. Okay.
They're like, you guys are just reps. You don't know anything.
Is the smoker thing in Texas more often? Like,
it's everywhere. It's a little more
easier. It's in Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama.
Oh, don't knock on Alabama people. They're sensitive.
Roll tide.
One thing I was going to ask you guys, it seems to me you guys can bring products to market from input from consumers faster than the older model. Would you guys say that's true?
For sure. I mean, we're not stuck to a traditional development cycle. We conceptualize or sit around and hash something out, where we go back to our suppliers and really talk to them about what they have available. And we're not trying to hit a traditional retail model of launch it at SHOT Show, take pre-orders so it can deliver in July. You know, when we launch a product, you know, we talk about the RS2 a little bit. You know, you posted it on your page earlier, and you know, we've been developing it for a little while, but now that it's here, if we were in a traditional model, it would sit here for 6 months. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't show it to anyone until SHOT Show, because you don't launch products in May. But we can, because we can start shipping this thing at the end of the month. And
just in time for hunting season.
Just in time for hunting season. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, as it's ready, it comes out. I think we launched a product in July last year.
Stores don't want to get their new stuff right now.
They don't.
No. Well, they're in the middle of business.
Yeah, they're in the middle of their... Yeah, they've ordered and planned for their entire year. This is not... And that's one of the problems with it. It's like they have this cycle that they work through that, you know, it kind of stifles what most companies are trying to do, but they've just gotten accustomed to that pattern.
And not that they don't want product delivered, but they don't want a new product that they're not ready for. A new SKU to show up in their planned display, and they don't know how to fit it in there. They don't know how to...
Their store dollars have been spent since mid-February.
Huh, I did not know that.
For the year.
Yeah.
And they already know what's coming in for Black Friday, most of them.
The other thing, a traditional model, because they have this traditional time frame, they also tend to launch a series of products all at once. And one of the disadvantages of being the size we are is we couldn't do that even if we wanted to. I mean, the cash flow to be able to launch 6, 7, 8 products at the same time doesn't make sense. But the beauty of this model is we don't have to do that. We can roll it out one at a time. And as we're ready to get a product, it's ready to go to market originally. And like you were saying, Ryan, the really key thing is we can take customer input. Right. So when we launch the RS1, we were already in development of the RS2, but we didn't have the full strategy around the RS3. And so we're taking customer input from each of the products as they come out to help develop the next one down the queue. And that's really what's important to being a direct-to-consumer company, is not just selling direct to the consumer, but listening to the consumer so you can service the consumer and give them what they want.
And right.
No comments on that.
Our customer is...
Why do you look at me?
You know,
right.
We directly care about what the end user wants, because that's who we have to make happy. Mm-hmm. We don't have to make a middle party happy with what they think they might have room to sell you.
Right. At what price point?
Yep.
That's right. That's
yeah, their gaps, what, you know, they're not going to bring in a new company to compete directly with their number one seller.
Right.
Or with their own house brands, which is getting more and more popular. We just kind of make it up as we go, and we're it works out sometimes.
I would say you don't make it up because just – I would say, I don't know how when I fit in the mix after. Was it a year after you guys started, maybe, when I first met you?
It was – so we met at the Sheep Show.
2 years ago.
No, it was
3 years ago.
It was,
oh,
man. It was the very
first.
This is
the one who went by himself.
Yeah it was the very first.
Little 10 by 10.
So it was – we had launched the July before that, so it was – I mean, 6 months.
15.
As far as our company in existence, I mean, we've been in existence for a year before that doing product development, but we had just started going to shows the previous July. So that's when we met.
I guess what I say on that is I see a correlation, and I am insulated on what goes on in Rockslide. That's my main focus. But people will bring things up that are gaps. People will bring things up that are wants. And all of a sudden, you know, 8-12 months later, Maven has that kind of a product on the market. Which I find interesting because these aren't the first time these have been brought up, that these are holes in the market.
Well, I think because big companies are planning their strategy around what Cabela's wants, what Bass Pro wants, and we're not. You know, they have specific needs that they see in their store. They think that that's going to be the way the consumer is going to buy. We listen to people, and we can turn those things around very fast.
And you do. Mm-hmm. That's what I like, is that you actually don't just like hear people and be like, yeah, yeah, that's great. Okay. Yeah. But you can see where you take that.
Well, we do that sometimes.
Mostly when me and you are talking, Tanya.
Besides
most
us,
of them are like, oh shit.
When Ryan has great ideas, we're like, oh, absolutely.
You bounce that off somebody else.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's genius. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite lines, I use it in the booth all the time, is the 10 by 42. Is the number one selling binocular in America because the 10x42 is the number one selling binocular in America. It is a self-perpetuating thing. People walk up and the first thing they say is, where's your 10x42? It's like, 10x42 is a size and a magnification. You can get one for $20. You can get one for $4,000. It really means nothing. But that's what everyone grew up with. Your dad handed you the 10x42 when you were out hunting because his dad handed him the 10x42 when he went out hunting. And everyone, but you got the B2, but you don't have it in a 10x42, but you have the B1, but the B2 is supposed to be better. Why? Like, because we can do things different. We didn't have to, you know, when you walk into these wholesale stores, they're like, all right, show me your SKUs. What 10x42s do you have at what price point? Because they know that that's the number one thing they sell. So that's the first thing they want to see from a company. So when we set out with the B2, it was like, we're not stuck to that constraint. Let's actually talk about the optical system and what's right and what will work best. And, you know, we played with that 9x45 to get that 5mm exit pupil because we really wanted to deliver on the low light performance. And it kind of takes people aback a little bit. Like, 9s and 11s, this is strange. Why did you do that? And we can explain to them because it's a performance thing. And we want you to use it in the field because it's the right thing to use. And we didn't have to please this guy with the hole in the market that he thinks he's going to sell to you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that it blows me away is how few people know what the numbers mean on the binoculars.
The people who are asking for a 10x42 and you ask them, what does that mean? They're like, I don't know. That's the name of it, right? 10x42. They don't know what 10 is. They don't know what 42 is. That's a lot of people.
We did a pod. Me and Matt Cashel, who's our optics guy in Rockside, did a podcast on optics. It's coming out probably this week. And, he brings up the 9x45s you guys make. He's like, people are zombies. They'll call me. They'll ask me, what binocular would you buy if your whole thing is you want really, really bright glass? You know, you want a scope or a binocular that's really bright, you know, low light. He goes, I'd get the 9x45s from Maven. They're like, well, why wouldn't I get the 11x45s? Or why wouldn't I get the 15x56s? Because it says 56.
Right. Bigger is better, man. It's
like,
America.
Well, his thing, they're zombies. America. He's like, they don't research it. They're like, everybody has this and I need that.
They're lemmings. Yeah, they just follow.
The zombie effect is what he calls it, and I can concur with that. We talked a little bit about the RS1. Kane, it's your baby.
Kinda RS2.
Break, oh, sorry, RS2. Break it down for us.
They're both his babies.
But the RS2 is new. So
that's, the new, and it's going to be pre-ordered.
And you always like the newest baby better.
You do like the newest baby. I mean, this thing's already a month old. It's old news.
Yeah, so. Hope for the newer one that you haven't
make
ruined.
Its own damn lunch.
Exactly. So we kicked off both these projects simultaneously, the RS1 and RS2, on the development timeline. As a matter of fact, they changed numbers about a year ago as we realized the RS1 was going to come out first. The 2.5 to 15 by 44 was going to come out first. This is one of those selfish projects. It's one of those things where, like, I like the ultralight. I like a simple scope. I love the RS1. I think it's just a super functional scope and covers a lot of ground. But I didn't really see a great ultralight scope, and if you've listened to me before, this is always the story I tell, but I could see these guys building these 5-pound mountain rifles and going out and spending thousands of dollars to shave ounces off their rifle, and then they put a 2-pound scope on top of it. And they're back packing up sheep hunting or goat hunting or, you know, heading up a pile of scree, and they've lost the whole purpose of what they were trying to do on that gun. And so I wanted to find a topper go on it. And if you're watching this video, you'll realize I'm not the perfect picture of ultralight, but that's all right. You got to shave ounces somewhere, and I'm not leaving the beer behind. Me so. This lets me carry 12 more ounces of liquid with me in the field. So wanted to make it simple, lightweight, and yet still really versatile. So it's a 2 to 10 magnification range. So it's a 5x zoom. And really the concept is replace that old 3 to 9 by 40. You know, that's the 10x42 of the scope world. 3x9x40. Where's your 3x9x40? 38mm objective lens. Let us shave some weight off the 40. It's got great glass in it. So as far as the light transmission, the pass through, the low light conditions are still really, really brilliant. Cap turrets, toolless reset zero. But really, the magic is it's a 12-ounce scope.
Yeah, it is light.
And, we were out shooting it yesterday and had everyone get behind it and shoot it on that little 6.5 Creedmoor we have. And it's money out to 400 and more. There's, no clarity issues on it, on max magnification. And, I think for a $550 scope, that thing is pretty amazing. So
what's the reticle in it?
So two reticles. We're doing a straight duplex reticle. We got some guff on our RS1 for not having... for putting lines on all of our reticles. It's amazing how many people don't
those
want
guys are just bitches. Don't listen to them.
You know what? If bitches spend money at my shop,
I'm making a duplex.
I'm listening.
Bitches are all right.
I'm listening, bitches. I'm listening.
I hear you, bitches. I hear you.
And there we are.
And the second reticle.
The second reticle.
Not to keep you on track.
Is a simplified holdover reticle called SHR. And it's the same SHR that's in the RS1, so you can go on the website and see that that reticle up on the pages. And it's still MOA based, so 5, 10, and 20 minutes. It is a second focal plane, so those minutes are only accurate at, totally accurate at max 10 power. But if you know what your drop is in minutes, it'll be accurate at 5, 10, and 20 on the max power.
The RS1, RS2, pretty much the similar glass, similar.
Yeah, same level of glass. This is the one, I think it might actually be the only product in our entire lineup right now that does not have ED glass in it. And we went back and forth on it very heavily with the engineers. They said it would add nothing. It's always a great marketing thing to put ED or HD or super whamadine glass or whatever you want to put on it. But because of the size of the objective lens and the optical system, they felt that it added weight without benefit.
The density of that glass added weight, and weight was most important. But you saw the optical performance on it. It's awesome for that size of a scope. The performance is great. And we were shooting in pretty low light conditions yesterday.
Yeah, we had a freakish thunderstorm roll through, and it got pretty dark. And I don't even think about the glass quality on any of the Maven products, because everyone that I've seen have been far superior to what I want. So... what pre-order wise? When's that coming to pre-order, Brandon?
My guess is it beats this podcast out.
Oh! And that will probably
yeah, this could be old news.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna put that.
Now he's gonna be working on it right if
you're editing this on in the car on the way home.
Well, from the girl perspective,
Monday.
What day?
The very latest.
Just Monday.
What's the day?
Monday. We'll be out by Monday.
Hey, Monday. I think that'd be the 22nd ish. This scope is light as a church fart.
That's one of the issues with having a small company is you can't just walk down the hallway and say to your programmer, hey, get this up. We rely on some friends to help us out here and there. And
low places.
We don't put a lot of pressure on them. So
yeah, and I'll
we should have it up Monday.
We have been taking up your time.
We yes. love
this is not waiting on us.
Yeah.
This is
yeah, we're actually waiting on some website stuff.
We couldn't do this without friends that we can call in favors.
Yeah.
Our
IT guys, gunsmiths, taxidermists, they just freaking lie to you.
Yeah. I think they lie to themselves.
They do. They think they're better than what they are in their time
frame. Well, they have hopes that they'll do things or be able to get things done faster.
I'm
going to
let my dog in here because she's whining.
I think that scope is great for females, too, because we're not quite as big. So
it's dainty.
It's light. And so, right. I mean, I don't know about, I can't speak for other female hunters, but Ryan, as this may shock you, is not...
You can't speak for other female, but you can speak for Ryan?
No. Ryan does not coddle me during our hunts.
I'm very dainty.
He is dainty. But what I'm saying is some female hunters that hunt with their spouses or boyfriends or whatever may get a lot more help than I get.
Gotcha.
He has full expectations of me packing my own stuff, my gun. And I'm fine with that because I feel like I should.
Is this going to be a counseling session?
No,
she goes out with me. She does her fucking part.
Right.
This sounds like it's going
to
be.
So what you're saying, Tanya, if I'm right, is that you want your shit to be as light as you can because you have to haul it.
Yes, because and I'm not. I mean, women are not as big as men usually. Some are, but
I've hunted with quite a few others, you know, couples, and there's a lot of weak ass women out there, and I know I'm going to get blasted for that, but.
Well, their husbands are carrying their gun, and then they have to weigh through. They're packing their weight or their pack.
Not who they claim to be.
They're so
on Instagram.
They're not the huntress they claim to be.
They're not the huntress they claim to be.
And I'm tired of. Never mind. I'm not going to go.
Don't
get him.
Don't kick over the
beautiful RS too.
Save it for one of those podcasts where it's just you and Tanya, and you're not dragging us down your.
No, rabbit don't take Maven down.
No, and I'm not. And I'm not trying to go down that rabbit hole. I'm just saying, for me, I feel like I have, as a smaller framed person, have to be even more conscious of my weight because I can't pack as much. I just physically can't. So last year we built.
So now you have an option.
I don't feel like that was an option before.
Yeah, we got a real lightweight gun and now the scope like this will be perfect.
And a different lightweight scope that we put on it last year almost ended.
Ended our marriage. If you have bad glass in a scope, it could end your marriage.
In 10-degree weather.
We should put that on the page for these.
I'm just saying.
Don't end your marriage.
Don't. Glass. Don't do it.
Dude, it was intense.
I almost took it off and beat him with it. Because I didn't know he had done that until I looked through it and could not see through it that he had changed the scope on the gun. So
she was convinced it was fogged up and it was just that certain brand of glass was not great. And
I can't see really well.
My bad.
Like, I don't have 20/20 vision.
I'm sorry.
All right. Back on the RS2. 1-inch tube, correct?
Yes.
There are no parallax. What's parallax set at?
125.
Going to sell like Luke Moffitt. I know you'll listen to this. This is the scope for you, buddy. Be on pre-order sometime in June.
On a Monday.
These will be... So the duplex reticles will be shipping in mid-June, and the SHR reticles will be shipping after that sometime.
Hmm.
We made a last-minute change to the SHR reticle, so the one you shot yesterday, the posts were a little thick for our preference, and so we retooled all of those reticles, and so they're going to come in a second wave. So we're just pre-selling the duplex right now.
Just
one of those.
And the pre-sale will be $100 off. So $450.
Oh,
$550.
Sweet. Nice. When do they arrive, you said?
Mid-June.
Mid-June, and then when did the MOA or the SHR?
Later.
ASAP.
As soon as possible. Sometime in September?
Late August, late September.
We were pushing hard.
Nice.
Probably August, maybe July.
Yeah, go check them out. I took a picture on Instagram, and I put it next to the RS1, and I am not an ultralight scope guy, but I can see people who would love it. Tanya being one.
Well, that's the thing about rifle scopes is a lot of people use one binocular. They have one binocular that they take everywhere. But if you have gun, you have guns, typically.
Yes.
So there's not one scope that goes for every place. And the brand loyalty on gun scopes is slightly different, too. You rarely talk to someone that only... They might use Swarovski binoculars all day, every day. It's the only binocular they love. But then you look in their gun cabinet, and they've got 12 different guns and 12 different scopes. So It's definitely an area of opportunity for us. And that's the nice thing with a little bit of variety of the two scopes we have coming out. And I'm sure we'll work on a third one here shortly. And what that might be and where it can fit within someone's gun cabinet lets us hit a little bit broader stroke. So that's always fun, too.
We talked about this the other night, but when like all the scopes come in, do you guys have that habit of leaving and letting Brendan unload everything?
As often as possible.
We do always. Yeah. The bigger the shipment, the less chance of the K now being in the office. And Brendan will have to unload it himself.
So they're telling us the story, Brendan, you got to finish the story. But basically, they popped smoke or had something else to do, and you had to unload a whole
container. So we had in our life between Brunton and Maven. We were doing some custom projects for people, and we had a truck arrive at our warehouse that was a full container load of duffel bags. I think it was duffel bags.
I think that's right.
And Cade, who arranges all that stuff, calls. He's, truck's going to be there today. We got the forklift ready. Had a couple people ready to unload. The truck pulls in, huge trailer comes around the corner. We've got the forklift ready to unload pallets. We open the back and it is full of boxes and no pallets. So I called Cade.
Loaded to the brim.
Called Cade. I was like, the truck's here, but the pallets aren't. What? So they just transferred from the, when they were on the dock, they just stuck all the boxes in the trailer. And so we spent a day doing that. And it all comes around. We've all had those days. When you're a small company, you end up doing some things like that every once in a while.
Everybody's a grunt in the small company.
Everybody's a grunt.
That is the great thing about being from a small town is that it's a close-knit community and you can get on the phone and start phoning.
Another time that these two ditched you, you had your in-laws and mom and dad.
Had mother-in-law, father-in-law, mother-in-law's sister out in the warehouse organizing duffel bags again. That was kind of our nemesis, the duffel bag delivery.
But it's a family operation. I mean, when we did the RS1 pre-sale, and we were committed to getting them out on May 1st for everyone that pre-ordered, me and my two oldest kids sat down here for 3 hours the night before
gluing
foam so that the packaging could go out on time the next day. So, and all of our kids have been down here doing a variety of things, and when I start the road trip in July to go down to Birmingham and the Houston show, my son's going with me. He'll be the second at the show for that road trip, a 10-day road trip. And so we're all doing, taking all of our families down and doing a show in Colorado next month. So there's a lot of buy-in. The bad part is I live close enough. I run over here about 3 times a day, but the other thing is about 5:01, my wife looks out the door and texts me and says, "Looks like you got people over there not going to be home on time, huh?" And usually because people swing by for a cold one and chat.
Oh, yes. We do need to talk about the infamous beer fridge.
There is a beer fridge here.
There's a beer fridge. We do a lot of traveling around the country, and it's a good time for beer tourism in this country. We pick up a few beers on the road.
Yes, you do. I do think that'll be the picture when I throw this out. It'll be the beer fridge. The beer fridge.
Did you leave us any beer in that beer fridge?
Well, I was going to say, it might not be the best time right now. Because It might be a little empty.
Yes, right due now, to your visit. It's beer and some antelope tenderloin that we thawed out to get cooked the other night.
Yes.
Wow. Gonna have to cook some tenderloin.
Now, what? How can you not get behind this company after you hear that? Beer and antelope in the company fridge.
And, you know, Cade's.
And the smoker.
And the smoker. And Cade's a councilman. Aren't you running for mayor or something?
I am not running for mayor.
But he is the president of the city council.
The presidente.
El presidente.
That's very good.
We try and stay really involved in the community. We all take our different roles. It's kind of funny right now. Mike and I are... I'm the president of the Kiwanis Club here in town, and Mike is the president of the Rotary Club right now. So we're both serving our terms, and so there's a lot of friendly rivalry between the two clubs. And
whoa, do you have an annual softball game?
Bowling.
Yep.
There'd be too many busted hips.
Oh my God, you're right. They'd be rolling around in walkers.
Yeah, we have to do it.
Brendan's the soccer coach. The soccer coach. And so, yeah, everyone's... That's why when we go uptown, it's like, all right, yeah, we probably know someone at almost every table at the restaurant.
Oh, there's no doubt. When you walk around here, everybody knows these guys. It's small town USA, which is pretty awesome.
That's why dinner last night, we had to be in the back room, because we like to set out in the bar area up front, but when
we had to hide.
If we're up there...
I thought it was because we were kind of...
Well, we also had you guys, and so we didn't want to have our reputation tarnished.
The server literally turned around three different times and walked back out
because of what
we were doing. Like mid-conversation, she's cruising and then stop.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Yep. Yeah, backtrack.
Yeah, that's very entertaining. I could see why you put us in the back of the bus.
Yeah.
We knew the language was going to require some separation.
After the bonfire, I wasn't sure how many of your neighbors would still be on friendly terms with you.
They're used to it. We do a lot of fire pits.
Between Tanya and Kate, it's an F-bomb off.
Oh.
That is true. They're blame nasty.
I don't know. Craig was getting pretty rough.
Yeah, Craig was trying to put you in a headlock. I didn't know what was
going on. We have the running joke. These are the three queens. These are the owners. Maybe, and then they have the 0.5 queen, which is Craig. He's running the camera.
Princess.
You want to say hi? Do you want to say anything?
Craig just bought a house today.
Yes, and it has a washer and dryer.
Birthday was this week.
And a yard. He's
and
adulting like a
and
champ.
A little yellow slide.
Is that for the chickens? The slide?
Probably.
It's a chicken slide.
That's a chicken slide.
Happy chickens, happy eggs.
So this is just a whole town of Lander. Rockin' Maven.
There are a lot of people in this town that are pulling for us.
Oh, well, you guys make a great product.
So it still makes me happy when I see a Maven hat on someone I don't recognize or a Maven sticker on the back of a car I'm unfamiliar with. It's like, that feels good.
Yes, and it's Maven, not Mavens.
Thanks, Ryan. Took you a while to get that straight.
Well, only about 4 years. We're slow learners. We're from Idaho.
We love you anyway, dude.
I don't enunciate, and I'm pretty illiterate, so I started a podcast.
That's the requirement?
That's, well, for half of them, if you listen to them, that's definitely the requirements. But future, what? I know you guys can't let all the cats out of the bag. Well, we'll say we came down, we were invited down to this cool little convention.
One of us was invited down.
Tanya was invited.
We won't admit who was invited, but one of them.
Brendan invited Tanya first, and then Tanya's like, I don't think I should go because it's, you know, there's a lot of guys, and I'm like, you were invited, not me.
I just didn't really feel like it might be my wheelhouse because I don't like, I'm pretty new at this, so I don't feel like I know enough to contribute sometimes in some topics.
And we have had a few conversations with other guys that I was going to go hunting with, and I said, well, Tanya will come, and they're like, no. No ladies.
Yeah, it wasn't just me. Some guys really, it freaks them out when there's the aspect of a woman being in hunting camp.
You might have other ideas and logic, god dang it.
I might, I don't know, but it freaks people out sometimes.
We were not freaked out.
No, you guys, are used to
it. You guys can tell you guys have been yelled at by women your whole lives. Joking.
So, yes, it was a good trip down. We got to meet some really awesome people.
Yeah, we had a good crew of people. Together. Diverse crowd of different
passions.
Shooting optics users.
Yes, we were brainstorming for a new scope, and I thought it would be, you have the tactical guys, you have the hunters, and they don't always mesh on what they want, and that was way easier.
There was a lot of meshing.
It really was. Meshing. The consensus was actually...
Well...
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought there would be more arguing.
Because we thought that was... We thought we would probably need to meet more today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had left half of today open, and it was like yesterday after coming back from shooting. Well, let's sit around and drink beers and talk about what if, because we got a lot further than we thought, so... Yes, what's next?
Exciting things in the pipeline.
More, you know, depth, really. Depth of product, depth of focus. So there's really not a whole lot more categories of optics to add as far as width. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a couple of logical ones here and there. But overall, it will be adding depth to our product line. So additional rifle scopes, additional B and C series. In various forms and functions that you'll see over the next eight to 10 months. Well, I was trying to count it up this morning before coming in, and we'll add as many products in the next year as we added in the last 3 years.
Wow.
So the growth curve is pretty exponential. And
we're moving.
Got any building? Yeah, I totally forgot about that. They're getting too big for the office they're in, so they're moving uptown.
Gonna be,
but we're staying on the Fourth Street.
We're gonna be building owners instead of building renters.
Yeah.
And so we bought a building about twice this size, just down the road, just far enough that my wife can't peek out and see if there's beer drinkers over there at five. So that's
see? An upside. Clever move.
But you're working, right?
Always working.
Always working.
Always working.
Right.
He's closing.
He's yeah.
Always be closing. Closed. Mm-hmm.
No matter what you're doing, it's somehow related to work.
The leads are weak.
the what?
The leads are weak.
Well, from what I know, you guys are coming out with is exciting times, and I'm glad to be a part of some of the suggestions. And I know I tell you probably
too many suggestions. I think going back to the day that we met, you know, you were asking about rifle scopes. And at that point, we knew we would do them eventually.
Right.
But we only had three binos at that time.
B1, 2, and 3 at that point.
Like when you do a long-range scope, you gotta let me be a part of that.
Yeah, and I appreciate it because nobody ever listens to me.
That's a true fact.
I shouldn't say nobody. Tanya never listens to me, but Brendan did. So it was fun. I was glad to be a part of it.
And we got to shoot full auto guns.
That was awesome.
And we got to shoot 1,000 yards
yeah.
off of a bunch of guns that were dialed in, like straight out. Just walk up to a gun and dial and shoot. It was impressive.
There was a lot of good hardware there yesterday.
There was a lot of good hardware. Your offhand shot at 425 still blows me away. That was awesome.
It's all the westerns he watches.
He watches that wobble.
RS2. Mounted on an ultralight 6.5 Creedmoor, just walked up. You said, "I'm going to shoot this offhand." Boom, ding, boom, ding. That was. We all tried to repeat it. We couldn't even come close.
It's the wobble effect. Any more practice, the easier it is.
Wobble.
Yeah, shoot at the top of the wobble.
Yeah, nice job.
No, machine guns is great. Thanks for having us down here. You guys can be found at mavenbuilt.com. Instagram is just Maven Optics, correct? Or is it?
Maven Built.
Is it Maven Built too?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anything else you guys want to add? Craig, anything you want to add?
Nope. Craig? No Broncos.
We're talking Boise State?
We don't want to add that.
We're talking Boise State? Are we talking. What are we talking here?
You know what? He's a Broncos fan.
They're both Broncos fans.
Oh, I didn't know Cade was.
Oh, yes.
I knew Brendan was.
We've got to get the hell out of here.
What about you, Mike?
The Cowgirls don't have a team anymore, do they?
Oh, shit.
Dude, we just recruited some more guys from Idaho.
We got Idaho kids.
We have
half of Boise
State.
Think
he can move from playing eight-man football to playing in the pros?
I'm only 6 foot four and a half, and you're in a 4 or 5 40. I'll give him a shot.
Good. That's pretty good.
We were just at the stadium, and we were down in Dallas.
NRA show, and we hadn't seen Jerry's World, Mr. Burns.
Yep.
He sits up there and goes, "Excellent." All right, thanks for having us down, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, for sure.